From the nation's capital, this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Today's program, ladies and gentlemen, Global Positioning System Tracking in Washington, D.C., what we do to electronically monitor offenders under criminal supervision on the caseload for my agency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. Our guest today is Carlton Butler. He is the program administrator for the GPS program. The website is www.csosa.gov, www.csosa.gov. There you will find links to our radio and television shows, and there you will find previous radio shows on GPS tracking of criminal offenders and television shows. We also have an article summarizing all of this. Carlton Butler, Program Administrator for the GPS Program. Welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Len.
All right, Carlton, let me do some summation. 500 to 600 offenders on any given day are being supervised, tracked under GPS and global positioning system tracking, satellite tracking. Since the program's inception, somewhere in the ballpark of about 20,000 people have been part of the GPS program here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. Somewhere in the ballpark of 1,600 offenders every year are part of the global positioning tracking system. So that's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people.
I mean, see, SOSA, my agency, your agency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, we've invested a lot of effort, a lot of money, and a lot of time into GPS tracking of offenders.
That's correct.
Okay. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do the program today, Carlton, is this, is that I get these news summaries from around the country and about crime in the criminal justice system. And I'm seeing a lot of articles from throughout the country that this offender or that offender was arrested, and they had a GPS tracking device. And within those newspapers, there were questions about the global positioning system program in those particular cities or in that particular state. And I've spoken to a couple of reporters in my time who said, well, my city oversold GPS tracking. They made it seem as if they're going to put a huge dent in terms of recidivism and or technical violations and or return to prisons. And one of the things that I do want to start off the program with is that the research, there's now about five really significant reports out there that basically show just that, that people on GPS, global positioning system, satellite tracking, ordinarily do have fewer arrests, ordinarily do have fewer technical violations, and ordinarily fewer of them are returned to prison compared to those people not under the GPS program. True?
That is very true. And I've read at least three of the reports. The three reports all were very favorable on the technology, the use of the technology.
Mm-hmm.
Very well.
And so that provides a certain significance, I think, to those of us in parole and probation to use this. And we've been a pioneer in terms of the use of GPS. Again, we've been at it since 2003. I mean, quite frankly, for many years until the use of GPS picked up around the country, we had more people under GPS tracking in Washington, D.C. than a lot of states had people under GPS tracking.
That's true. We were the second largest user in the nation, actually, California being the first.
And since we've been surpassed by Florida and I think a couple other states, but we're still one of the principal jurisdictions in terms of the use of GPS.
Yes, we are. We are still one of the principal users of GPS.
Okay. So I want to have a very frank conversation about our use of GPS here in Washington, D.C. We're not, even though the research consistently, powerfully, and in terms of research on people under supervision by parole and probation agencies, there's not a lot of uniformity in terms of the results of a lot of the research. Some show reductions in recidivism, some don't, but a GPS supervision across the board shows reductions, so there's promise there. But it's no guarantee that a person is not under GPS supervision is not going to commit a new crime.
That's true. It's not a panacea. It doesn't replace the good old-fashioned parole probation supervision model. With regards to supervising offenders that require the supervision, It is, however, a tool that can be used, and once used correctly, it can aid and assist the supervision bodies with supervising individuals while on whatever condition they're on.
Now, the other point that I wanted to make is that not everybody goes on GPS supervision. We either put high-risk offenders, sex offenders, or people who are having problems under supervision. Say they refuse to get a job, they're not going to drug treatment, they're not adhering to the conditions of their supervision. Those are sort of the two general categories of people that we have under supervision, correct?
That is very, very correct.
Okay.
And some of it is modeled off of trying to control some of the idle time.
Right.
And making sure that we have some notion of where individuals are when they have that bulk of idle time.
Right. So if the person comes to us and said, well, gee, I miss going to my drug treatment program because work held me back and the GPS system showed that he was at the house, that's a de facto lie. And now he knows he can't use that excuse because he's being tracked in real time.
Well, that's very true. But one of the nice additives to that is that through the GPS program, we actually have the ability to get an alert or an alarm letting us know that an individual who should have gone to a particular location has been instructed. The system, we can have the system to alert us that he or she did not go to where we told him to go to.
Right. And the other nifty thing about GPS is that it provides a lot of option for us. We can restrict that person to the city. We can restrict that person to part of the city. We can restrict that person to a block. Or we can restrict that person to not house arrest, but home curfew. We can keep that person in their home and track immediately whether or not they leave their home, correct?
Yes, we can. But in addition to that, we can also bar them from areas that we do not want them to enter for whatever reason.
Right, especially domestic violence cases and especially in terms of having a stay-away order. And if they're told to stay within, you know, they cannot be within 1,000 yards of that house or the victim. That's one nifty way of enforcing it and knowing for sure as to whether or not he's obeying his stay-away orders.
Well, that's very true. But we've also found the system to or the technology to be useful as well for exonerating individuals. There's often times when we may even receive reports that a particular individual was at a particular location and we're able to say that he or she was not there based on the GPS technology.
Right. And I have heard stories that people have asked to be placed on GPS, volunteered to be placed on GPS to prove that they, you know, they were concerned about criminal activity, that they've been part of a gang or they're involved in something and they want nothing to do with what used to be their friends and they want nothing to do with the crimes that their friends and former associates were involved in. So they asked to be placed on GPS to prove their innocence, just in case something happens.
Yes, we've had a number of cases that have done where individuals have actually requested to be on GPS. One of the statements we've heard, one of the testimonies we've heard from one of our participants is that it's easier for him to pull his pants leg up and show him that he has a GPS device, and they automatically know that, or for some reason they feel that we can actually, there's intelligence on them as well, and most of the time they don't want to be around that particular individual. So it's easy for him to separate himself from those individuals when he wants to.
And I've heard that story. I've heard, you know, you're hanging out on the corner and you're with your friends and somebody suggests something nefarious, and his absence, his excuse is to pull up his pants leg and say, I can't. I'm being tracked, and they're saying, oh, yeah, absolutely. We don't want you anywhere near us.
Right.
So it is. I mean, it's a way of saying, look, I can no longer continue being involved in some of the stuff that you're involved in, and here's my instantaneous excuse. All right. So, but having said all of that, again, I want to reemphasize that just because you have the GPS tracking device on doesn't mean that it stops you from committing another crime. I remember several years ago we had a case of a person who was sexually assaulting young girls in the northeast part of the city, and we were able to place that person at those crime scenes at that time and provided additional evidence in terms of his conviction. Mm-hmm. And so we know, we've known from the very beginning that people under GPS tracking, satellite tracking, for whatever reason they may be, shall I say, stupid? I am probably not a politically correct word to say, but if you're going to commit a crime while under GPS tracking, I wonder about your intellectual ability to tell one thing from the other. But nevertheless, it doesn't stop anybody from committing a crime.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't stop any individual who knowingly want to be involved in criminal activity or new criminal activity from really being able to prevent them from doing anything.
And we understood that from the very beginning.
Yes.
And we haven't said anything else but.
No.
Okay.
We've been very clear about that.
And also, throughout the other radio and television programs that we've done, we do know that there are people on GPS tracking who do attempt to fool the system. And I'm not going to talk specifics about fooling the system, but we do know that that occurs. We know that it's been occurring throughout the country. And we have, in terms of the equipment that we use now, we get alerts because if they try to, say, wrap a substance around that GPS device, we know, and the alert goes out immediately when that happens. Is that correct?
That is very, very correct. We know that there are a number of circumventing attempts or techniques out there.
Mm-hmm.
CISOS has been on the front of working with the very diligently with the company.
Mm-hmm.
And coming up with ways to be able to circumvent or not circumvent or be able to detect efforts to circumvent the GPS technology, and we have been very, very successful in doing so.
Okay.
So much so that we do have the ability to know when individuals have or will attempt to make attempts to tamper with the device.
You are part or were part of a national effort through the Department of Justice of getting people involved in GPS programs to talk to each other. Was that
yes.
correct?
We are a member of probably 34 people, last I count.
Mm-hmm.
People from all around the nation that were meeting quarterly. From that, we've put together a user manual, and we've developed GPS standards, unlike ever in the entire nation ever been developed.
Right.
Those are in the final stages as we speak. In fact, we have a call tomorrow, a conference call tomorrow, where we're going to be discussing some of the final stages, and we hope that or two documents will be released very soon. So, yeah, it's. I think that as a GPS practitioner, I'm excited to see both the standards and the user manual, because I believe that it would be very beneficial to anyone in the future with regards to GPS technology.
Right. But the whole idea when I spoke to the Department of Justice about this initiative was to get information passed back and forth. So if the folks in Idaho were having a particular issue, mm-hmm. they could reach out to you. And if you had a particular issue, you could reach out to the folks in California.
Well, yeah. And the other good thing about that as well is that we're able to network and exchange ideas. But not only that, we all come up with different challenges in GPS, so we have the ability to reach out to each other as those challenges become.
Now, I'm not going to give away the farm here, but I do want to make it clear that even though an attempt to block a GPS device, there is another way, and I'm not going to say what that other way is, but there is another way of tracking that individual electronically that they don't know about, correct?
That's correct. There are actually three ways, but one of the most prevalent way is a technology. I understand is a technology that allows us to still be able to track
right
a movement
right
of an individual. Yes.
Okay. So I do want to make that clear that even though they think they're successful in terms of wrapping that substance around a GPS tracking device, there are other ways that we can track that individual, and they're probably not aware of the fact that we can track that individual. Let me get on to the next issue. Oh, this is important. I haven't even brought this up yet. A lot of folks in the law enforcement community or anybody within the law enforcement community has access to the 500 to 600 people that we track on a day-to-day basis through the computers in their patrol cars, correct?
Yes, they do. We have what we call a crime scene correlation program.
Right.
Crime scene correlation program is a program where our agency offers limited access to our law enforcement partners that allow them to be able to have dual monitoring of certain offenders, yes.
And when I say law enforcement, it's anywhere from the Metropolitan Police Department here in Washington, D.C., one of the best police departments in the country, anywhere to Housing Authority Police, anywhere to the United States Secret Service, anywhere to the FBI.
That's correct. We also have the Park Police, Montgomery County, Prince George's County as well, who's a really big users of the program.
Okay. And so there are some people on this program, because I do want to talk about the fact that we have active and passive and what that means. We do have some people either between our monitoring center, ourselves, and law enforcement. We do have people who are tracked in real time.
Yes.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we're halfway through the program. I do want to reintroduce our guest, Carlton Butler, the program administrator for the GPS program, Global Positioning System, satellite tracking program here in Washington, D.C. Both of us belong to the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, a federal executive branch, independent agency providing parole and probation services to the city, the great city of Washington, D.C. We're talking about GPS tracking, and if you didn't hear the first part of the program, I asked Carlton to come down and talk to me about this because I was, again, reading these newspaper articles throughout the country where the GPS program in other cities where they were questioning the fact that, you know, this person who committed a crime was under GPS tracking and thereby questioning the GPS program itself. And that's why I wanted to have this very frank conversation with Carlton about what it is that we do here within Washington, D.C. Carlton, I want to go to continue this whole concept of offenders on GPS tracking trying to fool the system, and we've already said that we know that it exists. You share that information with different people throughout the country. There are countermeasures that we have in place that we're not going to talk about that they themselves are not going to know about. So even if they try to circumvent the system, we can still track them. Now, but they can just cut the daggone thing off.
That's true. They can. But again, if they attempt to do that as well, we get an alert letting us know that the device has been tampered with.
Okay. And in many cases, because the people that we have under our supervision are some of the higher risk offenders or people who are not doing well, we have this conversation with our law enforcement partners about this individual. So word will go out to not only our own community supervision officers, what most people throughout the country call parole and probation agents, not only to our people, but law enforcement as well, that this individual, that John Doe, cut his anklet, which means that John Doe may be up to something.
That's very true. And one of the interactions we have is that we oftentimes have to call the police to notify of the tamper.
Right.
In the District of Columbia, this city council and the mayor enacted an anti-tamper law.
Yes.
That anti-tamper law specifically says if you knowingly tamper with your device, allowing anybody else to tamper with your device, and or intentionally failing to charge your device, you can now be charged with a misdemeanor crime.
Okay. So, and that came as a result of the problems that we've been having and people throughout the country have been having.
It has.
Okay. The other part of it is that we have people under supervision who simply don't charge their GPS devices. Every individual has to charge it up when they return back to their house.
That's correct. They're required to charge twice a day.
Okay. And they're required to charge twice a day. If they don't charge twice a day, the alert goes out.
That's correct.
Okay. Let me get down to this whole concept of supervision, because I did say that of the 500 to 600 that we have under any given day, they can be tracked in real time, and in some cases are, by our law enforcement partners. Now, what I understand is this. People need to understand that we are not a 24-hour-a-day, 365-day-a-year agency. These individuals are tracked by us, by our community supervision officers, anywhere from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So, and some of our community supervision officers will take a high-risk individual that we're really concerned about and track them in real time, maybe even in the evenings, maybe even in the weekends, and watch those alerts or get alerts from the central monitoring system that we employ, correct?
That's correct. And we also have, as a backup, another individual who works late in the evenings, helping to monitor as well.
Okay.
And, of course, I'm available at any time.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but we do this. But the majority of individuals, the 500 to 600 on any given day, are what we call passive supervision, that from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., the community supervision officers is keeping an eye on their coordinates, and or the monitoring center that we employ, they get notifications.
That's correct.
Okay. If that person does violate and say a domestic violence order, and if we are tracking them between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. or on a real-time basis, they can get the word out to police right away.
Yes.
Okay. Now, workload. Workload in every piece of research that I've ever read, the parole and probation agents who are doing GPS will complain about the workload. Having a person under GPS supervision increases the workload dramatically, correct?
Oh, it does, because of the usage of the technology.
Right. And you will find all sorts of problems with GPS. For instance, they could be inside of a building and it won't track them. They could be under a bridge and it won't track them. It's not a continuous tracking. We don't have the science down to a continuous tracking. Now, again, there are other ways of tracking that individual that I don't want to talk about, but from time to time, in terms of satellite tracking or GPS, they do fall off the radar screen, correct?
That's correct. That is normally associated by way of the industry,
right,
to environmental conditions,
right,
that do change from time to time.
We can track them in a car.
Right.
But, you know, if they're underneath a 12-story building, I'm not quite sure they're going to be able to be tracked by satellite.
No, you can't track them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, and we get these alerts because they go in the buildings. We get these alerts because they don't charge their device. We get these alerts when they're right on the edge of an area that they shouldn't be in, and that creates a workload problem. So we significantly, not solved, but we created an intervening measure. We took the company that provides this device, and we have them now tracking individuals in real time. And if there is a violation, they get in touch with this individual. If they cannot resolve the issue, then they turn the information over to our community supervision officers. Am I right or wrong?
That is very true. We set all of that up through protocols.
Right.
And we pretty much outline the intervention process that will go forward by the vendor in terms of the first responder.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But I do want to emphasize that GPS tracking, you take on an enormous amount of workload anytime that you have a person under GPS tracking. And we have recognized that, and the standard recommendation of virtually every piece of research I've read is that you really should have a central monitoring system, and we have a central monitoring system.
I agree. The monitoring center actually takes away a lot of the guessing component with regards to the supervising officer. By the time the supervising officer gets information on the alert, a lot of what he or she would attempt to sit there and try to figure out has been resolved for them.
Yes.
So it prevents them from having to spend long periods of time trying to filter through what might have occurred or what could have occurred. The monitoring center pretty much, when by the time they call them, they're experts on the other end. They pretty much can tell you what occurred and then give you enough information for you to be able to make a decision.
In some cases where the individual did not charge the unit, it's a matter of calling the residents and saying, why didn't you charge the unit? And that person saying, whoops, I'm sorry, I forgot.
Well, our protocols require that they call and instruct the individual to place the device on the charger for that period of time. And in addition, what they do is reinforce what the requirement is for the purpose of charging to begin with.
Right.
And then report that out to the probationary officer with regards to what they did and what might have been said during the time of the conversation between them and the offender.
Right. And if there's any indication of with a slurred voice or angry or negative encounter, that's reported back to the community supervision officer.
Yes, but we also have all of that being recorded, and they tell the individual at the time that the call is being made, that the conversation is being recorded, and any kind of unacceptable behavior, we generate a copy of that recording to show what was actually said at the time to the probationary officer as well.
Okay, so again, one of the things I like to pride myself in terms of doing whenever I do radio shows about our agency, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, is taking a look at the national research. And in, I think, virtually all cases, we pride ourselves on being a research-based agency, an evidence-based agency, and ordinarily, in virtually all cases, we employ whatever the national standards are, which I think is unusual for a parole and probation agency. From what I've read from the GPS research and what I've read in terms of the results of the GPS research, and in fact, I'm going to have an individual from England who has put out a report who came in and observed what it is that we've done. I'm going to have him on the radio show in a couple of months. We seem to comply with all of the suggestions in terms of the research.
Yeah, but we're pioneers. We're kind of helping to write some of the research as well, because our program is one of those nationally watched programs in that we get individuals or groups to come in all the time to see our program and to talk to us about the success part of our program. So
right, but the average person listening to this program may not understand that. I don't want to say that we've been pioneering, but we have. I mean, I understand that a lot of people come to us, but I just want to reemphasize that you belong to this group. They came through me, and you know, they are the U.S. Department of Justice, and whatever standard is out there, we comply with that standard.
Yes.
Okay. And in the final analysis, I think that most of the folks within the law enforcement community that I've talked to about GPS have been pretty pleased with the program. I mean, it is, you know, it is not foolproof. It is absolutely not foolproof. There's no way that you can say that it's going to stop people from committing new crimes, but it does reduce the number per the research, per the national research. There are significant reductions in terms of arrest, technical violations, and return to prisons. And in fact, according to national research, they may have the strongest outcomes of any intervention for people under parole and probation. So it seems to be encouraging, is the point.
It is encouraging, but one of the challenges in any GPS program is making certain that all our law enforcement partners are fully aware of what the technology have the ability to do, but to also give them some insight of what the objectives are for your program.
Right. And there's no way, by the way, for people listening, that you can keep a person on GPS forever. I mean, there's just no way that you can keep it. I mean, for some sex offenders, they're on for an awfully long time, but we try to convince individuals that they can work their way off of GPS by, if they're not complying with their terms of their supervision, if they comply, they can come off.
Yeah, that's true. I've only recalled ever seeing one case where the individual was actually ordered by a judge into GPS, but for the most part, most of them are conditional. And if they meet those conditions, that there's a graduated process where they can get off. Yeah.
So the whole idea is to have those graduated sanctions. You increase. So again, you restrict them to the city, you restrict them to a certain section of the city, you restrict them to a block, you restrict them to their house. I mean, there are graduated sanctions of GPS that can convince the person to fall in the line if they pull drug positives or if they don't go to treatment or if they don't do the right thing.
Yes, it is.
All right. Anything else? I think it's a fascinating program, Carlton.
Well, I'm excited about the program. It adds a lot of benefits to our ability as a tool to be used both for our law enforcement partners and as a tool for our probationary officers to continue to supervise individuals that they have in their care and custody. But it's a good system.
Our guest today is Carlton Butler. He is the program administrator for the GPS satellite tracking program for our agency, Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency in Washington, D.C. We have prior radio and television shows on the use of GPS. You can see them at www.media.csosa.gov. There's also an article if you go to the blog on that website or the general website. You can reach all of our media materials, www.csosa.gov. We appreciate your comments. We appreciate your criticisms. We appreciate your suggestions for new programs, and we want everybody to have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.